Today's episode is brought to you by Oak Tree Products, the ultimate one-stop shop for audiologists, hearing professionals, and sound professionals. If you're looking for diagnostic or screening equipment, this is the place for you. From the essentials to the hard-to-find tools, Oak Tree has you covered. We've personally been ordering from them for years, and they've always come through. We recently just ordered new diagnostic equipment for four offices through Oak Tree.
During the pandemic, when supplies were hard to come by and everything was up in the air, Oak Tree kept things in stock and moving. They've handled supply chain disruptions, tariff uncertainty, all of it without missing a beat. Whether you're outfitting a new practice or just need to stock up, check them out at oaktreeproducts.com. Again, that's oaktreeproducts.com. We will link to them in the episode description and tell them we sent you when you visit oaktreeproducts.com.
Today on Hear Us Out, we have Dr. Melissa Wyckoff, a dedicated audiologist who not only helps people hear their best, but also works closely with musicians and those navigating the challenges of tinnitus. In this episode, we'll explore the impact of hearing health on everyday life and the unique ways Dr. Wyckoff supports people who live and work in sound-rich environments. Our music lovers and those concerned about protecting their hearing will definitely want to tune into this one. So, Dr. Melissa, thank you so much for coming on Hear Us Out today. We're excited to have you.
Well, good morning. Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be with you today.
Why don't you tell us a bit into your journey towards becoming an audiologist? If I recall, there's a family reason that you got involved in the first place.
I became an audiologist because my grandfathers couldn't hear growing up. They both served in World War II and were very hard of hearing later in life. I was a shy kid, and I remember being 8 or 9 years old. I was sitting on my grandpa's lap, and I went to whisper him a joke or a secret, and he couldn't hear me. And he said, "What?" And I repeated it, and he said, "What again?" And that moment was just broken. I was afraid to ask again, and the moment went on. And I knew from that point on, I didn't want anyone else to miss those little moments that are actually really big moments with your family.
You seem to have a lot of specific areas of interest within audiology, including working with musicians and tinnitus. Can you talk a little bit about how you found your place within all the different areas of audiology that one can get into?
Sure. There are so many, as the two of you know. And I think that both of you also love music like I do. And that kind of is what drew me to the two of you. Audiology is a very big world. And I founded a private practice almost a decade ago in Atlanta. And if you're going to survive amongst all the chains and an oversaturated area and all the things, what makes you special? What do you love? Where can you shine? And I ended up shining and being able to really get satisfaction out of helping people get relief from tinnitus. So my interest in that took off there. And I got very lucky to have some really great mentors. Dr. Steven Nagler in the area really took me under his wing. And I'm so grateful for everything that he's taught me about what I know. And then I got involved with the American Tinnitus Association. So that really snowballed. But I think the drive really comes from you help one person and you make a difference in their life. You want to help more people. And then for music, I've always loved music, right? That's what I love to hear. So when we decorated my office, I hung up these Buffalo Springfield, this record. I cut up this record. It was the same record I took to show and tell in the first grade. And I hung it up on the wall, and it gave me a connection to what I'm doing, what I want to do, gave me a connection to my patients. And I just got very lucky that the right person came into my office, and he got the same VIP experience that anyone would get in my office, but it really mattered to him. And then word of mouth kind of spiraled from there. And I've gotten to take care of a lot of the musicians that I love to hear.
That's awesome. What ultimately led you the route of private practice and opening your own venture?
Sure. I have a feeling it's similar to what led you to open a private practice. But I think our patients really deserve better care. So 10 years ago, my daughter was born. I was working elsewhere. And that practice sold to a hearing aid company, and it just didn't feel good anymore. Mm-hmm. I didn't love what I was doing. I wasn't meant to be in sales, right? I don't want to just sell a hearing aid. I don't want to be told it has to be this brand. It has to be cost that much. I just want to help people. and love what I'm doing. And if I'm going to spend the time away from my family, it has to be doing something that I love and that's meaningful and that's worthwhile. And my practice stemmed from that.
Awesome.
Now, if you have somebody coming in, your average patient walking in saying, I have tinnitus, can you walk us through what that evaluation and treatment or management plan is for them?
Sure. So it's very, very unique to that patient. That's a great question, but it's kind of like a choose your own adventure. And it all comes from figuring out from the moment you look at that paperwork, before you even greet them in the waiting room, who is this person? What are they dealing with? What's going on? So it's kind of finding clues from what they've told you in the paperwork. And then when you walk into the waiting room, who's there? Are they by themselves? How are they sitting? How's their posture? How are they feeling today? What's going on? What are you taking from that? And then it comes from taking a really thorough case history and figuring out, what does this person got going on? How is their brain working? How is their brain coding the tinnitus? What's going on with them? Is there hearing loss? Is there not hearing loss? Is hearing, maybe there is hearing loss, but hearing isn't even a concern. So with these tinnitus patients, everyone is usually, everyone, audiologists are very quick to want to put a hearing aid on them. And for a long time, that was the only treatment we had available, right? But that may not be necessarily what the patient wants or needs or is ready for. So it may start with a baby step towards some kind of other sound therapy before they're ready to wear the hearing aid. Or maybe they really do need a hearing aid. They're not hearing, and correcting that hearing is what will correct the hearing loss. But I need to figure out, we need to figure out, who is this person? What kind of personality do they have? How is their brain coding the tinnitus, alarming them to the tinnitus? And what's the best step to treat them? So we're going to do that thorough case history and then TIMPS and reflexes. I like to do distortion product OAEs as a gold standard on these tinnitus patients, because when they have normal hearing, sometimes that OAE can give us information to something else that's going on and make them feel less alone, less crazy, less like it's in their head, because it can give me information. We'll do a standard hearing test. I always test the interoctaves, especially working with musicians. The more detailed and thorough hearing test, as you know, is so important. That's the gold standard on everyone. We'll do a high frequency audiometry. And then I like to match the pitch and the volume of the sound the patient is hearing, or a memory of that sound when it's at their worst. And then I do residual inhibition to see if that tinnitus will temporarily get better, temporarily get worse, or if there's no difference at all. And then we put those puzzle pieces together to figure out the best solution. I've had a lot of success with Neuromod's linear tinnitus treatment, which has been just a real gift to someone who specializes in tinnitus, because I've been able to help people who just didn't want a hearing aid, right? So now I've got another option and it works. It's not just something you can give to your patients and just say, this will work, I'll see you in a year, right? It requires a lot of counseling, a lot of listening, a lot of patience. But if you've got that interest and that time, you can make a huge difference.
Have you ever looked at, if you were to put in that amount of time without the device, if you think there would be improvement, or if you think it's specific to the device in the context of linear, when you're introducing that into the treatment?
That's a great question. And I'm sure that there are studies out there, some white papers that look at it. But because before I incorporated linear about 2 years ago, and I was giving my patients the same care and counseling before, and some of those patients, a lot of those patients, when linear came out, got so much better when we added that in. So it's definitely not a placebo. That is a real, real treatment that has made a huge difference for a lot of people that I had already treated with hearing aids or with tinnitus retraining therapy or with sound therapy. So it's definitely the tool, but the tool needs the counseling. And the counseling is wonderful, but it's also not the counseling alone. And as a private practice audiologist, you know, I went to London a year or two ago. I took a course in cognitive behavioral therapy for tinnitus, but that's not in our scope here in the United States. So I can't keep my doors open just counseling patients, right? So I refer on for cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a wonderful piece in that puzzle, or I believe in what we call like a multidisciplinary approach. But I think the patients do best when there's a tool that's proven to treat tinnitus and the good counseling. You can't really have one without the other.
I tend to find that the patients who come in with tinnitus, the emotions are riding even higher maybe than those who come in for hearing loss purposes, assuming that they're an adult. Having a child with hearing loss is a whole other ball game. But how do you center the patient back if emotions are running high, if they're coming in feeling frustrated, hopeless, and feeling like they've exhausted all their options?
What an excellent question. It's tough. It's like a dance or a game that we play. I don't take it lightly calling it a game, right? But it is a very fine balancing act that we're playing, where I want to give the patient that space to talk to me, to tell their story, to be heard. 99.9% of the time, my clinic, my office, is the very first place that a patient has been to after they've been to see 100 other people, where they actually have the opportunity to be heard and be listened to and not be told that they have to live with it, not be told that they're crazy.
There's nothing to do for it.
Right. And it's the worst thing that someone can hear, because then they start to ruminate. There's nothing that can be done. I have to live with this forever. No one else can hear this. I'm going to hear it. And then it gets worse and louder and worse and is torture. But on the other side of it, I only have a limited amount of time, right? I've got an hour and a half with this patient, and I've got all of this thorough testing that I have to do that I don't typically do on someone just getting a hearing aid or coming in for their annual exam. So there's language that I use, or there are things that I'm listening for, and I kind of know how to listen but guide the conversation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's one of those areas where it's can be very challenging for both patient and provider to try and get the individual what they specifically need. I also think about the narrow subset of patients who have hearing loss and tinnitus, and their primary concern might be the hearing loss. And then when you aid them and the tinnitus gets worse, which is not so common, but does happen, when you encounter that, how do you address that with your patients?
Sure. So that's a reactive tinnitus. And so it's a combination of counseling and then figuring out how are we best going to fine tune these. So we might take baby steps instead of, you know, we do our real ear measurements, we go full on gain, and they come back. It's rare, but they'll tell me that, you know, things are worse. And there are two things that could be happening here. One is, it's a wonderful thing because their system's responding, right? Mm-hmm. So we're making new neural connections and the system is having a reaction. Fabulous. I'm thrilled. But there are some patients, this happens for with a hearing aid, and it puts them into a panic and is making things worse. And so that requires a lot of counseling and fine tuning things slowly up to gain, up to full on gain, getting there slowly so that we're getting that brain and that auditory cortex comfortable with this information and this change without throwing it into that reactive system that's actually trying to protect itself. It's pretty amazing how the brain works, but everybody's brain is different. And that's why there's no one size fits all with tinnitus.
I'm sure I've been guilty of this. For those with tinnitus who do pursue a hearing aid to help with the hearing loss and the tinnitus, that some audiologists might jump to a masker and include that off the bat. Is that your approach? Do you wait on that? When do you feel like it is appropriate, or you feel like the step should be taken to introduce a masker?
Absolutely. So I am actually not the biggest fan of a masker. It's probably my last ditch effort, because when we think about a masker is going to throw noise in and cover up the tinnitus. Great. You can escape the tinnitus. But now we have this other noise. I want my patient to have no noise. So I don't like to use masking with my patients. I'd prefer bimodal neuromodulation, which is with a Lanier, or sound therapy, which is using that hearing aid, or I like something like a Widex. Then anything that's giving them sound, but I don't want to totally cover up that noise, right? Even with tinnitus retraining therapy, we're trying to find what we call that mixing point, which is a blend of, okay, I want you to be able to have a conversation. So I want you to be able to hear my voice. I want you to be able to hear this noise I'm putting in, but I also want you to be able to hear your tinnitus. I don't want that noise so loud that it covers up your tinnitus. I do like the idea of a masker, of just having noise in there so that your brain realizes that noise is nothing.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
I put that noise in. I'm in control here. That noise doesn't matter. And then your tinnitus can fade away as your brain learns to ignore that noise. But I don't really like to try and cover up the noise because, one, your noise can fight to get louder than it, or then you're never really going to have that true peace and quiet. There's always going to be some kind of noise needed.
And kind of flipping gears, going back toward the idea of working with musicians. And what I've found in working with musicians is it's so rare that they've actually had a conversation with an audiologist who is talking to them about what they need. And I would extend that out to monitor engineers and other sound professionals, that it's generally interactions with salespeople from companies that are offering these products, telling them what they need, as opposed to figuring out what the individual needs. How do you customize your appointments and what you do with your musicians that have very specific needs and also things they don't like about monitors that they've historically used?
Awesome, awesome question. And this actually just happened to me on Friday. And right before I got on with you, I was on the call with a tour manager telling me that their artist feels like they can't hear and they'd never had a hearing test. And it shocked me because it's somebody that I grew up listening to, and your ears are your money makers, right? Yeah. So I flipped the conversation from talking about coming out to take the ear mold impression to saying, why don't you have this artist? Look, we'll be very discreet. I have a private practice. You can come see me after hours, but come in and have a full hearing test. And I flipped the conversation from getting somebody to come out backstage to just take ear mold impressions to actually see this artist and give them a full hearing exam, right? To make sure that we're treating their hearing health. I love working with musical artists. We call it our like wall of fame on Instagram, and it's so much fun, but it's such a fine line between, we don't want to be that audiologist that's just there taking the pictures with the artist. You actually want to be the audiologist that's taking good care of these artists. And a lot of these artists don't want to know, right? They don't want to know that they've got a hearing loss. Yeah. Maybe it'll make them less marketable, or they're afraid of it, but you have to have a conversation with them so that they understand that information is power with their hearing, right? And getting them comfortable. Or we'll have somebody coming in. Some artist's manager called me on Friday and they were trying to negotiate prices of in-ear monitors. And they're like, well, we'd go with this company or your company. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm going to take care of your artist's health and their hearing. I'm not selling an in-ear monitor. That price is not up to me. You know, that's between you and the company. But what we want to do is take the impression, and, you know, it's just educating them, but you've got to find a way to educate these people without feeling like you're lecturing them. Mm-hmm. But we as audiologists, I'm sure you know, often just get left out and just get seen as, we just need someone to take an ear mold and go. It has a huge impact on how they record music, how they understand what's going on. So you have an opportunity to take good care of them. And when you do take good care of them, you're going to be their audiologist for life. I have some artists, I'm sure you do too, who every time they're in town, they come in just to see me, just so I can look in their ears. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're concerned there's earwax in there. Maybe they just want to take say hi. Maybe they want, you know, I've got someone who does, who's a sound engineer, did a Super Bowl halftime show. And right before he flew out to the Super Bowl, his last stop was my office to get just a hearing checkup and make sure everything was perfect. And then he went on an international tour and he came right into the office just to make sure everything was perfect before he went out. And those are the kinds of little seeds that we want to plant, right? And I know that you do the same and you do a great job of it also.
Yeah. And it's, the more you're in that world, the more you realize how small it is and how
people know each other.
People know each other. And it's, we've had kind of the fun of making connections that we didn't even know were there, where somebody might have heard of you through somebody else that you didn't know they knew each other. But it's such a small world that you have that positive impact on one and it translates down the road with others.
It's such a small world. And I had an you know, we talked earlier about that VIP experience for that sound engineer. And it's that same experience. Someone came in to get ear molds made for their, you know, small church band. They didn't happen to be anybody famous or anything exciting, but we gave them the same experience we give to everybody else. And then it turns out that they go to church with the same person that actually connected me to that artist. I got a text in the middle of the night asking me to go to somebody's home who was, you know, before they performing in the Super Bowl. It was pretty amazing, but it comes from that word of mouth, and you never know who's walking in the door or who is connected to who when you're working with musical artists. So it's pretty fun.
And do you tend to get involved in the specific product conversation of which monitor you would recommend for somebody, or are they typically coming to you just for the impressions and they've already decided on their own what they want?
So I can, and I'm happy to, but my go-to most incredible person, if you've not had her on your podcast, you should, is Claudia Pine over at Sensaphonics. So I did Gold Star training with Sensaphonics, gosh, maybe 15 years ago. And so that same hip hop artist who was in the office on Friday, the first thing we did is set up a phone call with Claudia so they could figure out exactly what they need. Because while I know a lot, I don't know everything. I'm an audiologist and I want to stay in my lane as best I can. So I have the knowledge to recommend something if we really need to. But before you take my recommendation, I really like you to talk to those companies. Also, Bogdan over at Fur is amazing. And I think that they have a lot of knowledge about their products. So I think it's best that the artists and their team talk specifically with what company are we using, and then they're going to help you figure out exactly what they need.
I feel like it really helps them trust you more because you put in your sense of what you think is best, but also have that third person there to say, you have your knowledge, they have theirs, and everybody collaborate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because what I've found a lot of times with artists is they're pushed into the highest number of drivers and, oh, this is the best model, get this. And there's not necessarily an understanding of the physics of the ear and the way the ear works and what potential complications that could introduce for the monitor engineer who may not have had any sort of formal education on that front either. And it's good when they're coming to you for the information of understanding, hey, how's the ear working? How do I get what I need on stage, not just from the device, but then from the kind of putting the device to work.
Absolutely. The most expensive one isn't necessarily the best one for you.
Yes.
So it's that same with tinnitus. We take that multidisciplinary approach. It's the same with music, right? You really need a team of experts figuring out what's the best thing. And when you're a performing artist, especially a professional performing artist, it's not just you. You might have whole band. Even if you're just a solo artist, you've still got a team of engineers. And so we need a system that's going to work right for everyone.
You said you opened your practice about a decade ago.
Yep. It'll be 10 years this April.
Wow. So
congratulations.
Tell us some of the most challenging aspects of opening up a practice and maybe how it was for you during the COVID times of navigating that as the head of the chain of needing to figure that out.
Oh, those are really good questions. I think there's a couple of questions in that one question.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's nice to talk about it because the hardest part for me is you're on an island. You are all by yourself when you first start out. And how wonderful that I can have a conversation with the two of you who are in a private practice, right? It's not easy not having a network or support of other audiologists to bounce things off of. You've got to make these decisions and have confidence in yourself and trust them. So for me, that was the hardest part. And my husband, who's always worked behind the scenes, was really that driving force pushing me, like, trust yourself. I think all of these people, you know, when we first opened up, we would network, we would do things. I didn't know what I was doing. I was flying by the seat of my pants. And all of these people were like, well, if you know, you should pay this person to do that and pay this person to do that. And they'll give you advice and they'll do that. And I'll tell you, you know more than any of them. You don't need all of that stuff. You can do it all by yourself. But the hardest part for me was finding the confidence to and the security to know I could do it all by myself. And I sometimes still struggle with that. But then I look back on like, well, we're still here thriving 10 years later. It's going to be fine. But I think in opening up, it's just a lot of the confidence. I don't know what I'm doing. I went to school. I got a doctorate in audiology, not in business. And so every once in a while that shakes me. Well, I don't have an MBA. Somebody must know more than I do out there. And the truth is they don't. But it's those little thoughts of like, well, you know, what if this isn't good enough? And I'll tell you, you're good enough. You're definitely good enough. And then during COVID, that was really hard. I have two other audiologists, two patient care coordinators, an office manager, my husband behind the scenes, and myself. But prior to the pandemic, it was just myself and that one office manager, that one patient care coordinator. My biggest concern, you know, we shut down for 3 months, was how am I going to put food on her table? How is she going to pay her rent? So you've got to take care of everybody else before you can take care of your own self. And I think it was that mentality of taking care of my staff first and then taking care of myself that helped me stay afloat. You know, we would do a few virtual things here and there. But very lucky for us, we closed in March, we opened back up in June, and I had people who trusted us and who were ready to walk in the door and ready to pay for services from us.
That was the same timeline that we had with the March close and the June opening.
I have like PTSD. I don't like to think about it.
Found when it comes to running the practice that making one decision allows for the next decision, allows for the next decision. And if you get something wrong, you learn from it. And that allows for the next decision. So what you had said before about those other people and those consultants not knowing better than you do, the fundamental question is, who knows your business best? And the answer is you. And maybe somebody can help you implement things. But you know what you need. You know what you want. The biggest decisions for Peachtree Hearing inevitably go to you. You have to make those calls. So you learn and grow from that. And I think that's something that we don't often think about, that there's nobody else to take those big decisions from you. You have to handle them. And you've been handling them for 10 years. So why wouldn't you handle them for another 10? You've done it.
Yep, absolutely. Well, you have your vision, right? You have your vision and no one else can really tell you what you need better than you.
Yeah. And if somebody knows how a big box operates or a chain store operates, well, my assumption is you probably want to be very different from that.
Totally.
Their model's not going to assist you. People don't necessarily get that. So one of the questions that we like asking within the podcast is, can you think of a time where you got to become a part of somebody's story, where you felt like the work that you did had a really meaningful impact on somebody in a way that impacted you?
I think that is an awesome question. And I think that it was that first person that I really, truly treated with tinnitus. We like to do video testimonials. And we have a video testimonial from this patient. You know, when I first opened up, we were asking people for testimonials. Again, we didn't know what we were doing, but we thought that this would be good for us. And so it was this one, it was a a retired physician, actually, who spoke about, he was happy to, you know, get on camera and talk about his experience with us. And I do not like to listen. I will listen to your podcast. I'm a fan of your podcast, but I hate to hear my own self. I hate to hear anybody talking about me. I just don't like it. So I don't usually watch them. And my husband does all of our, like, our marketing and our internet and all of the, you know, our website, all those things. And he was like, Melissa, you really need to watch this. And in the video, he says, and I had no idea, but before I saw Dr. Wyckoff, it wasn't a matter of how I was going to kill myself. It was a matter of when I was going to take my life until I got treatment, and that changed everything. And hearing something like that just throws your passion into what you're doing. Because, you know, I became an audiologist. My father was a veterinarian and I used to watch him do surgery. And then I had open heart surgery when I was 12. And then all of a sudden, I didn't like watching other people get surgery, just the idea of that in my head. And I was like, well, I'm not going to be a veterinarian. I'm not going to be a cardiologist, but I still want to be, I love science. I still want to help people. Became an audiologist. There's no needles, no blood. So you think, you're not really changing lives. You're not saving lives, but you really are, especially in a private practice like yours and mine. You can change lives every day.
Absolutely.
My face changed in the middle of that story. I did not see that coming. That's a beautiful answer.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about your collaboration with Jewish Family and Career Services providing hearing aids to Holocaust survivors?
So when I first opened, I opened from scratch. So I had like not a single patient. I had all this time on my hands and I thought, well, I want to use this to do something good. What can I do that will make a difference? What kind of good can I do? And I graduated from University of Maryland and I had read some article that they had given hearing aids to a Holocaust survivor. And I said, I want to do something like that. So I contacted Jewish Family and Career Services. I told them what I wanted to do. And we created this program where I decided that I will give free services, find a way to get free high-end hearing aids, and take care of these patients for life. So Starkey helped us, and they donated, at the time, top-of-the-line hearing aids for 17 survivors that we had found and collected that were in need in our community. And so before I was very busy, this was just something that I did. I was given these hearing aids and now I just take care of these survivors. I think I've given two pairs of hearing aids to date to survivors since then. I had no idea there were so many survivors in my Atlanta community. It's something that we love to do. And so these survivors will come to us. We will get them hearing aids, sometimes just asking nicely from a manufacturer. I actually just sent an email to my rep, Alyssa Fisher, over at Widex, saying that I have a new survivor from JFNCS in need. Would she be able to help me? And she had a pair for me, which is really incredible. So now that the program is up and running, it's not such a hard process to find the hearing aids anymore. During COVID, all the donations stopped. During COVID was right when word started to spread about this program and survivors needed hearing aids. So I started taking hearing aids. When someone would get new hearing aids, they would give me their old hearing aids. I'm not a nonprofit. This is totally volunteer. We don't get anything out of this. We don't claim it on any kind of taxes. It's just a volunteer effort, right? Something I want to do to put some good in the world. So people would give me their hearing aids and Starkey would refurbish them for me at no cost for these survivors, which was incredible. And then we would gift them, or somebody would pass away and they would give us the hearing aids and same kind of thing. But luckily we're out of that COVID time. Yes. But it's been kind of amazing, the relationships that have come out of that. I didn't expect to have those, but a survivor and his wife came to see me before Passover the year before last. It was the night before the first Seder. They happened to mention that, you know, his son was on vacation. He had nowhere to go. And I said, well, come over. Why don't you come over? And they did. I was having a Seder for, I don't have parents here in Atlanta. I grew up in Connecticut. My family moved to Florida. And so it was my family and, you know, where my kids go to school, two other families came over. And they came and they, you know, got to know my children. And then, you know, my children go to a school where last spring they happened to go know, my daughter's in chorus and they were singing in the chorus. And then, you know, it's something for JFNCS for survivors. I didn't even know about it. And my daughter remembered this gentleman and he remembered her and he gave her a big hug. And it's just really cool what's come from it. Sorry, I went completely on a tangent there. But yeah, it's just a really awesome thing to do. And I think we have a responsibility when you have a small business. And, you know, I've got the gift of a business that's done well, but I believe that a lot of that comes from what you give back to this world and what you give back to your community.
You know, it's funny these days. I feel like there's a lot of nonsense on LinkedIn and other social media. But when I saw those posts, I was like, this, I want to amplify this story to whatever extent we have an audience. I want this to be out there. And that was one of the things that attracted me to having this conversation was that you do that sort of work and that you're really helping impact lives for people who deserve it. Not that everybody doesn't deserve to be helped, but
absolutely.
When you can take those steps, there's something really nice in that.
I sincerely appreciate that. And it feels kind of yucky sometimes to put that out there on LinkedIn or social media, but we do that because hearing aid manufacturers started seeing it, right? Mm-hmm. My rep from Widex saw it and wanted to help. So I started doing that in a time where none of the hearing aid manufacturers were donating hearing aids anymore. And so our community, you know, if one person sees this and maybe has a hearing aid laying around that they could give me to give to someone. So it was a way to just show people what we're doing. I don't really love to advertise that kind of thing, but I do believe, you know, if we can do anything to inspire somebody else to do a little bit of good or someone else to help us with this program. So not every survivor is comfortable taking a photo, but when they are, we love to take a photo and talk about what we're doing because it's so important. And that's how other people see it. And the program can keep happening because it really is purely volunteer based. We get nothing out of it other than certainly I get feeling good out of it. It feels really good when you see the smile on their face or their children's face. And this is a community that we talk about why it's important for someone to have a hearing. We don't want them to feel isolated. I don't want them to be sitting alone going back to memories of that they, you know, negative memories. I want someone to be present and hear every bit of this beautiful life with this beautiful family that they've created in the face of such adversity and struggle to get there. I think that this community really deserves to be connected to this life that they've worked so hard and fought so hard to have.
It's really important work, and I appreciate that you've been doing that and that you continue to do that. And I think it's also an important lesson for even the next generation of practice owners that you can run a thriving practice and you can also do good. You can help your paying patients, but you can also help your community in a way that's meaningful.
I think there's this misconception or sometimes accurate thought that audiologists are just trying to make money, just trying to get every hearing aid sale they possibly can. It's something that I don't like that when we're associated with that. So it's nice to put it out there that we do want to help. And there it goes beyond making money off of hearing aids. There's a lot of goodness, there's potential for goodness out there. And you're a prime example of it.
Thank you. But Dr. Schechter, I also want to tell you that you are worth every penny that somebody would pay to come see you, right? You're allowed. And it's really hard for an audiologist to hear. I've done guest lectures about private practice at Washington University in St. Louis, where I got my doctorate. And it's funny because it's this helping profession. And so many students, especially if they're not, they know nothing about private practice, there's this feeling that, you know, we're a helping profession. And sure we are, but you have the knowledge and skills that you're allowed to charge for your work, especially at your caliber work. It's good work that you're doing. And I'm not telling you that. I'm just saying that so, you know, other audiologists who don't really understand private practice might be listening to understand that. But that's really hard in our field. And it's a funny thing. But it's okay to charge. You should charge. Your service has value. And I don't think that other people will see value in our services when we don't charge for what we're doing. It's hard.
And I think when you provide good service and when you have somebody walking away from your office with a positive experience, it's money well spent. It's not just a lump sum that somebody dropped on a device. It's quality care. It's improving life. It's reconnecting people in a way that they may not have even realized they needed to be reconnected.
Totally. They're getting you with that and your care and your services. You know, you can't keep the doors open to provide those services if you're not charging for it.
For sure.
My last question for you is, for those out there that say, what can I do to prevent tinnitus? We know there's no way to prevent it. And there are all these things out there that should not be done at home. But what would you say in terms of lifestyle factors like your stress, your diet, your sleep? Is there anything you would recommend to you, to patients out there, to say, do everything in your power to just maintain a good lifestyle so that any existing tinnitus is not exacerbated?
All of it. You just named it all, right? You've got to take good care of yourself. Sometimes it's out of your control, but sleep is a huge one. There have been a lot of studies that came out about sleep recently. Sleep, stress, protecting your hearing. Oh my gosh. Call my friend Claudia over at Sensaphonics, right? She'll get you in the right hearing aids, those custom musicians plugs, you know, when you love music, like I know that you do. You know, I did an article for Lifehacker magazine years ago, and I talked about the importance of protecting your hearing, because we used to feel cool when we'd go to a concert and you feel like your ears are full of cotton afterwards and your ears are ringing. And that meant like, oh, I had a good time. What a great concert. But that's going to lead to permanent damage later. So taking care of yourself, wearing the earplugs, right? Those are the big ones. And then sometimes there's nothing you can do to avoid it. So finding an audiologist who doesn't just want to sell you something, who actually wants to take care of you, I think is the best plan of action. Or finding somebody, a medical provider, who wants to listen to you and take good care of you, and they'll come up with a plan for you.
And my last question. For the 20-ish years that I've been around this field, been in this field, there's always been the next thing coming that's going to be the end of things as we know it. And none of that stuff ever seems to pan out. I'm curious from your perspective, kind of the flip side of that, what are you really excited about going forward in this field?
Gosh, what am I really excited about? You know, I'm kind of excited with going back to a couple questions back that I think, as generations are coming up, they're more interested in taking care of themselves and treating themselves. They might not be embarrassed to wear a hearing aid. It's not a big stigma. And so some of the musicians that we see and we talk to are excited to protect their hearing and excited to learn about their hearing. So I think I'm excited about the culture shift where it's cool to take care of yourself. And I know that word cool sounds lame probably to these generations, but it's a good thing to take care of ourselves and understand how our bodies are working versus it's something that we don't want to think about, don't want to talk about, right? I'm excited that more and more I get backstage and artists want to talk about their hearing and how that works and what their hearing, you know, what they can do to protect their hearing. Those are the things that I'm excited about, that it's not a forbidden conversation or a taboo conversation anymore. It's okay to have those conversations with these people.
Yeah, that the walls around hearing health are starting to come down and become a little more mainstream.
It has been an absolute pleasure to chat with you, to hear about your perspective, your take. It's been a little while since we've had an audiologist, and you have been so fantastic to talk to. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find Peachtree Hearing and connect with you?
Thank you. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with the two of you. I'm so grateful for your time today. So I am Peachtree Hearing. It's just peachtreehearing.com. We are in Atlanta, Georgia. I am licensed in Georgia, in Texas, in Florida, because of that specialized tinnitus treatment. So we do a lot of telehealth. But we'd love to see you if you're in the state of Georgia. We're in Atlanta, Georgia, and we love what we do. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest on Hear Us Out today.